IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome. This is episode 38 of the Killing It
Podcast.
Hi, I'm Carl, and I'm joined by Dave and Ryan. Welcome, gentlemen. How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Not as warm as you are.
Yes, well, you know, I'm hopping back to Hawaii because it's cheap and close, right? People forget, like, this is less exotic for me than it is for some people. Cost me $300 or $400 to get to Hawaii.
So. Well, sure. I mean, it's the you're there because you can be. let's start out with the very basic. You can do it, so plus, why not?
For the same amount of time and trouble and travel, I could be in snow up to my eyeballs, and I've decided not to do that.
Yeah, that's a personal choice right there that I highly endorse. Plus, you know, I will say, having done many work calls and many webinars, et cetera, over the years from many exotic slash very weird remote locations, you know, if the trade-off is every now and then you got to do a 4 a.m. conference call in order to be in Hawaii for the rest of your day, that is a trade-off I am totally willing to make.
So it was only 6 when we got on this call. Again, people don't know we've been on this call for half an hour.
Oh, of course. there's a podcast before the podcast. See, the funny thing is, so, like, you know, I was bemoaning how cold it is. Like, I'm hoping that the holiday spirit is going to kick in for me as the whirlwind of Christmas parties and fun stuff in the area kicks in for me, like, this weekend. I didn't really get a chance to do it last weekend, but now it's the, like, you know, I'm looking at the calendar going, wow, we've got like 4 different Christmas parties across friends, and we're gonna duck downtown and see the lights and like all of that cool stuff starts hitting. So it's the, you know, I bemoan it's cold, but DC can be pretty cool at the Christmas, at the holidays.
Yeah, and that's the ultimate question, is just how effective is all of that holiday marketing at counteracting the fact that it's freaking cold outside. And I will say, from here in the upper left-hand corner of the country, it's not snowing here at all. It's like 48 degrees and raining its eyeballs out. So, you know, welcome to winter in the Pacific Northwest.
You where you are, probably don't ever get snow. You just get rain.
Yeah, we get like snow maybe once a year. And when it happens, the entire place shuts down and people just stay home.
Yeah, we get like the 6 to 7 times a year for like a proper snow. It did snow this week, but it was like, it made my car white. That was this, you know, it didn't affect anything other than it made my car white.
Well, and then it melted and made your car dirty. So,
also true.
All righty. So we have some fun topics today. We're actually kind of revisiting one of our perennial topics. And that is, you know, this whole thing about disruption and transportation. So the cool story, I guess, is now what's going on with Uber. And, you know, we've talked about this several times. Dave, was this your topic from the Wired article?
You know, actually, I think this one was yours, Carl, but. I've got some statements on it. What's interesting is, you know, Uber's a great example of disruption, right? We all like to hold them out like, oh, they disrupted the taxi industry. But you know what? They're actually going through 2 real pieces that I think are important to dwell on. First off, they are not profitable. I must start with any statement by saying they are not making money, but more importantly, they're actually subsidizing rides. Like, they are putting money in to subsidize and drive down the cost in the pursuit of growth. I'm not convinced that there is a path to profitability here for them, you know, without significantly changing that. And then the second thing, by the way, is they are about to lose their license in London because they have not been compliant with regulations there. So yes, they've been massively disruptive, but, you know, have they truly been successful? That's an interesting kind of thought to this.
See, we did a project a number of years ago with a big, what I will call traditional media publication focused on business, right? You know, we were doing research into the marketplace to answer the question of what is the profile or the set of attributes that makes the best business people, right? Pretty broad brief. But the question came back to, well, which matters more? Running a business well and making a profit from it and being sustainable and predictable through upturns, downturns in the economy, et cetera. Running the business well versus running a significant business that everybody knows about and everybody participates in and everybody has heard about. And my answer was, well, it's never an easy either or, it's both, right? You have to do something that is going to have an impact, but if you can't run this thing like a business and make a profit at it, somebody else will. And in fact, most of the disruptions that we talk about in technology, we're not, you know, everybody talks about that mythical first mover advantage, and yet the first mover in almost all of our key technology segments was not the one who ultimately capitalized on that marketplace.
Okay. When I think of first movers, I think of all the people who put in the fiber, went bankrupt, and then it got sold off 10 cents on the dollar. I want to be the guy who buys all the fiber for 10 cents on the dollar.
but I want to be contrarian for a moment, Ryan, because I believe as a business person that you are right. But I'm going to say the markets are not letting people do that. Let me point to Amazon broke things. Amazon came out and said growth is more important than profitability. With the exception of one quarter, they have never actually been profitable. They flirt with it, but I believe that every time they get close to it, Bezos says, spend, spend, spend. Go figure out ways to drive that down on research ideas or anything, because we don't actually want to be profitable. We just want to grow. And the markets got addicted to growth more than actual profitability. And then we can project this all out in the kinds of growth companies we've seen, which aren't actually profitable. And we can go all the way to the extreme example of, I don't know, WeWork, right? Where we're going to go delusional and go out there and say, you know, hey, we don't have to be profitable at all. We're just going to like crazy grow and we're just going to hemorrhage money. And the markets kept throwing capital at this, saying, oh, it's great, it's great, it's great. But if any of us with any sensible business knowledge look at that and go, you're just hemorrhaging money, you're just not getting there, and you have no path to get there.
Well, and for me, the other piece of this puzzle is that Uber and other people, Lyft, you know, several other companies have gotten good at the disruption model. Right? We can go in, break all the rules, just pay fines and call it marketing money, and just force ourselves on that. But that has now changed. Several cities are doing what London's done, what the EU has done, and they're saying, wait, you have to follow the regulations or get out. And now we're even seeing where cities are seeing all of these, you know, little scooters start to show up, and they scoop them up, throw them in the garbage, and pass a law that says you can't do that, right? And so the regulations are starting to come in. And what's happened to Uber and Lyft, right? In the US anyway, they are being re-regulated to the point that they're almost taxis. And I had a discussion just this week about when I choose taxis, because I'm now taking more taxis than I did a year ago, because the taxis don't have surges. Yeah, right. Yeah, and so sometimes it's like, hey, $60 for an Uber, $50 for a taxi because it can't surge. Right.
Well, you see, but you can get status with Uber and not be subject to I kid you not. This is a real thing. I've got a level with Uber because I've used them enough where they list you are protected from surges as a like benefit of the level.
Oh, see, I take mostly Lyft, so I don't plan to do
that. Yeah. But I tell you, I really do think that this is the point where we have to have a conversation about what is good for investors versus what is actually good business strategy, because it's diverging. And by the way, the investors, like big Wall Street investors and these capital investors, they're not doing us any favors. They're not actually helping build businesses that are, while they're positioned as disruptive, they're not actually great businesses.
Right? See, and in the functional sense of things, right? Like there has to be somebody who is, you know, disconnected from today's metrics enough, who says, I will do something that's never been done before. You don't, as a market or as customers, you don't know how to measure it, value it. You don't know how to evaluate whether I'm doing it well. And that's where innovation comes from. And then eventually somebody figures it out. See, I remember years ago when Uber was new and it was just beginning to get its feet out there, my operational brain kicked in and I was like, wait, how do you train the drivers? How do you ensure customer experience quality? How do you actually vet the cars that you're riding in? How do you provide for safety and whatever? And ultimately back then, the answer was, you just fundamentally don't. The way they did it was, look at all of these things that a responsible business person might do. We're going to fundamentally ignore them just so that we can introduce this thing. And then I agree with you, Dave. I don't believe that they are on a path to profitability because I don't think culturally that they're going to be able to make money and do things the way they invented the organization.
It's also highly reminiscent.
Somebody else who comes along behind and makes the money.
It's reminiscent of the original internet boom where people said, oh, there's a new business model. You don't have to make money. You just have to have customers. That was stupid then and it's stupid now.
Stupid now.
And what's funny is there are companies that say, look, we can disrupt this and we can blow everybody out and all the investors go to them. And in the meantime, what's happened on the other side is that companies like Apple, and Apple's not the only one, but they basically say, look, everybody wants a free phone. Tell you what, my phone's 500 and now it's 7 and now it's 1,000 and now it's 1,500. And like they've got all the money, right? They didn't create a non-working business model and then fix it. They created a working business model and then pushed it.
Right. Well, because they were fundamentally not first, right? They saw the early innovation and disruption and they came and capitalized against it. I will say, at a very tactical level, this is why I personally live in the channel, right? The reason that I do what I do for a living is that I am fascinated with the translation out of a thing that might be interesting and useful into a use case of actual measurable value. Other than Apple, right? Fundamentally, the inventor, the vendor who creates these disruptive capabilities will never have the scale capacity to go and do that work for individual customers in a mass market rollout. That is the world of the dealer, the integrator, the local provider who says, I get all that stuff. I understand what the capabilities are, but let me put a responsible grown-up package together where you can benefit from this thing and not get in trouble the way that the vendor has. It is the essence of the value proposition why the channel exists.
Well, so I love that summary because I agree with you. Like that is the value and that grown-up perspective. And I think that's why I'm also, you know, I've been personally pushing back a lot on these. Like, let's not get sucked in by all the hype of these guys. Oh, they're disruptive. Oh, they're super cool. Yeah, okay. They're doing some interesting stuff. And I like the core technology idea is quite good. And yes, they are fixing, you know, we're picking on Uber today. I could pick on lots of topics. Uber, like their core idea is quite good. That market needed to be done better. But let's also put on our grown-up perspective here and say, hey, you know, it kind of has to be profitable too. Like it has to actually be a real business. It can't just be, you know, disruptive for disruptive sake. By the way, from a society perspective, like there are rules and regulations for a reason. Did we see their safety report that came out? Like kind of need to work on some of these issues.
We can do that someday. But for now, we need to switch to another one of our favorite topics, which is, hey, we got a cute little robot from Walmart.
Well, because so that this one, for those that want insight into behind the scenes, we love to talk about this idea of this kind of bet that I've thrown out there. Like, which will happen first? Will a driverless car show up at my house to take me somewhere? Or will an automated vehicle bring me a burrito? And so there's generally an email that flies around when we're picking stories that talks about, hey, here's a burrito example. And so the concept here is Walmart is testing or implementing driverless grocery deliveries in Houston. So I posit that I could actually move to Houston and have a burrito delivered to my house from Walmart.
That's a real commitment to winning the bet.
Well, you know, it really is. I'm not sure I want to go to Houston just for a burrito.
Taking Lyft to the burrito store.
Right. But this is a really interesting kind of idea in that, like, you know, we always talk about drones being this idea. We think drone immediately is the flying helicopter style that flies through the air. And then when we say self-driving cars, we really envision like Teslas doing 80 miles per hour, you know, with a guy sipping a coffee and not touching the steering wheel. The actual interesting implementations that I think are going to happen first are is these slow moving autonomous vehicles that are doing deliveries is way more likely to happen first. You know, sub 25 mile per hour has a lot less safety issues, no people to deal with. So you've got a simpler algorithm to put it together. I really do think that I'm going to get my burrito first.
Right. Yeah, I think all evidence is presently trending in the direction of I think that the robot's going to bring the burrito first. But what I will say is, again, the use cases here continue to be creative surprises. And I say that in a very positive way. When Walmart, of all companies, is the first to market with a radically advanced technology, people scratch their heads and they say, well, Walmart's not the most advanced retailing organization. You know, if you go to their stores, they don't have in-store technology. They're not investing in the customer experience or omnichannel or things like that. But if you remember who they are inside of their soul, they are a logistics and distribution company. Right. Walmart exists for the purpose of moving things from point A to point B. It makes perfect sense in my mind that they would be an early mover in bringing groceries to you in an automated fashion. They've got the scale, the scope to be able to do it on a large scale, but it is their DNA to be able to do that. Now the question is, okay, if they pioneer that capability, how do the rest of us get in on that? How do we actually get to participate in what are other use cases where we might see this stuff take hold? God bless the Walmart folks, man. This is fascinating.
But by the way, they're not the only ones in it. Right. George Mason University here in Fairfax has already had automated student delivery of food. We had an article about the University of Texas at Dallas has now released a fleet of these Starship delivery robots for the 3 mile range around campus. Mm-hmm. This is happening in a lot of different spaces.
I can totally see this taking off on a college campus where they have complete control over the environment. They can build sidewalks dedicated to these things or lanes of traffic that are dedicated to these things. It is interesting to note, we talked about last time, Walmart sort of winning the war, it looks like, with patents versus Amazon. Amazon can take a 10 mile square area and say, look, we're going to throw a bunch of money in here. And as Dave was just saying, lose our shorts because all we want to do is prove the concept, right? Walmart's more like, no, we need to actually make money doing this. And they are a little more grown up in that sense.
Well, they're held to that different capital standard. So they're having to be.
Right. And with our last topic and this topic together, we do need to have a discussion of how we rebuild our infrastructure to take care of driverless cars, whether it's on the freeway or in the city, because 25 mile an hour cars, like if you think about your house, okay, your immediate neighborhood, you're good. Then you get to the main thoroughfare, might be holding up traffic there. And if you have more than one of them, you're seriously holding up traffic.
you haven't driven in DC in a while. They just go 25 mile per hour because there's just that many cars.
Exactly. See, we all flash back and we remember the Segway. And before it was actually launched, it was this transportation revolution that was going to reinvent the layout of the modern city. Clearly that didn't happen, but that will eventually be necessary to take care of this, right? For those of us who appreciate a good Star Wars reference, right? The attack of the drones was not just flying things. They were of all shapes and sizes and modes of transportation, and they will be in the future here where we see slow-moving autonomous vehicles. I personally am fascinated by the industrial applications of this around what we will call a really advanced version of just-in-time inventory. Like, you don't need to warehouse and stockpile componentry anymore. You just have this constant flow of machines bringing components to you as they are needed, and they can be managed and monitored remote. I find that to be super cool. Things will fly. Things will happen on campuses. We need to be able to start thinking of this in the context of exactly where Carl's going. Your local town, your local customers, will they be ready for that new autonomous distribution network? And can they get paid in the process?
Right, or take advantage of it. I mean, I think, and cities and such are transforming. I mean, look, think about the, you know, in the 80s, the growth of the shopping mall and how it had spread everywhere. No one's building malls anymore. Now they're building mixed use, integrated living situations. People are being brought closer back to. We're already seeing the rebuilding of the living conditions of people, you know, in terms of the way they do. These mixed use communities go up everywhere, transforming previous pieces. That's going to allow more of the walkable, short distance piece. The rise of the scooter is because of this.
You know, when I think of, I just looked through the haze just a tiny bit into the future, I think you can use the analogy of mixed case to think about these delivery drones that work for more than one service, right? Because my daughter and her friends, they all use Postmates and DoorDash, right? And they just go on an app and go click, 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 and $50 worth of food shows up. It's a miracle. But that same drone, if they don't have deliveries, they could be doing work for Walmart, for the grocery store, for other people. And so I can totally see a business where you have one drone that does these other things. And as we talked about before, if you can hand off the merchandise with perfect knowledge in blockchain of controlling your inventory, it makes it much easier to have a service where the drone is kind of like the free agent.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, and to the channel angle on this, I think even if you're not necessarily getting into the specifics of the drones themselves, I think this is something to be starting to be tracking, because it's going to start impacting both your customer and all of the way, you know, you, your customer, and the way they deliver services. You know, you have an opportunity here, you know, the dreaded digital transformations phrase for me, but you have the way of thinking about the way customers do business and making changes based on what's coming.
All right. Final topic of the day. So this is one of these things where before we were on the air, Dave and I were talking about how we've been talking about this, but we didn't have the word for it.
That's true.
The word of the day is SplinterNet. And, you know, we talked before about the contract for the web. But China, Russia, and several other countries who have a sort of a different view of the world want to create an alternate internet where people can have access to all the stuff that's approved, nothing that's not approved, and kind of at the core of it is saying, look, the internet was built by Americans with American values, but those values are not as universal as Americans and Europeans want to believe they are. And yes. So they want to create a different internet where, look, you know, even between countries, these countries would say, look, we're going to have our own internet where we control what gets said and what things you can discuss and so forth, which games you can play. So I think there's some serious disruption there for the entire, what we call the internet community worldwide.
As with disruption in any format, some creative innovation will also require the destruction of existing norms and capabilities. For every use case, when I read about the SplinterNet, for every use case where I think, okay, A, I get it, and I understand the localization of cultural values and commercial expectations, but I think that there's more trust if we do it that way. There's more capability. We can facilitate even more advanced sharing of information and commercial transactions if we trust the internet resources more. But my ability to just open up my email client and send a note to you, and you, regardless of where you are, that might not be nearly so straightforward and easy as we've taken for granted. So the thing that I take as the basic answer here is this will happen whether you want it to or not. You, me, any any person listening to this conversation, whether you think that one universal set of values can govern the entire internet, or you think that localization is a good idea, bad idea, it's not up to us anymore. It's not up to any of us individually. The splintering will happen. How do we adjust to that and begin to govern data and commerce and collaboration in what's supposed to be a global marketplace?
Well, so I'm going to go real high for a moment, and then I'm going to go real tactical. So it has, I'd always been, and I still lump these into two categories. I look at the democratic side, you know, democratic internet and the authoritarian internet is really the way that I'm looking at it. There are sub genres there, like there are specific countries, but you can generally put them into two buckets. The Americans, Europeans, Australians, we're all going in the direction of that democratic, some version of that. Authoritarian countries, China, Russia, Iran, are going in much more of that controlled, centralized, you know, management. So you need to, high level, you need to be aware of that. Now let's go super tactical for anybody who's dealing with typical, you know, small, mid-sized companies. Everybody is an international business. Just everybody is. They just may not know it yet.
Right.
So I'll use myself as a quick example. Obviously, launching a new business myself, in setting up literally just my email list, I had to make decisions about GDPR and data right. management just in setting up my email list, because podcast listeners could be anywhere in the world. So I have to make those decisions from day one around what standard am I going to use for data management? How am I going to be compliant? And I'm a small business. I'm an exact classical small business.
In some ways harder on a small business, because you're like, okay, do I know all the rules for all my people with a Canadian address and an Irish address? And
you know, right. So, it's,
and, you know, this is not the first splintering of the internet. I mean, if you think about it, started out, we had .org, right, for people who run the internet, and .com for commercial, which couldn't even be connected legally until 1994. And we had .mil and .edu. And then we de-splintered it. But then there was the emergence of the dark web, right? So where do you go if you want to have somebody kidnap somebody? Well, you can search for that, but it's not going to be on Google.
So right.
Google and others have said, look, there's certain things, human trafficking, drugs, other stuff, we're not going to do. So search engines evolved to get you to a part of the web that everybody else is making invisible. And so having China and Russia get together and create a whole different web, the connections between us all might actually go back to that dark web again. There might be a different dark web that connects to our existing dark web. But I think the splintering's a thing that we will see from now on, and there's no way to go back.
Sure.
And a lot of this, even our government is going to say, look, there's lots of stuff you can't have access to. And because it's very consistent with the need for security.
Right. And by the way, you know, and so these are all things that any size business really does need to become aware of, you know, and again, we like this angle, but I'm going to say it, you know, we're constantly talking about helping your customers with, you know, real business problems. Here you go. Like, here's an actual set of, like, how are you managing the law, the legal landscape? When we talk about compliance, we're now able to link it to specific examples. You know, you need to be thinking, when as the internet splinters, you're going to be making decisions about which sections of it you care about. You
know, well, and I think we will all admit, when it comes to security, privacy, data management, and regulatory compliance, these are not new conversations, and yet they are embarrassingly undersolved, right? We've known about these things for a number of years. We've not solved these problems. I think that this world brings very stark relief onto it. It's no longer just a nice to have, it's a must have. And it kind of goes back to, you know, you think about the physical architecture of the internet. We are connected. There's a data pipe between here and China, between here and every one of these sub-internet areas that's trying to create their own walled, safe environment. You can get through. There's just a firewall in place. Well, everybody knows you can get around a firewall. There are both, you know, above the board and under the board ways to get around those kinds of things, you are still connected. The question is, will you have the public permission to do the things that you're trying to do? And the answer is, it depends, and it's up to individual companies to comply. The governments really don't care whether or not this makes commerce difficult. They're trying to protect the citizenry. It's up to you.
Just information management. You could totally see a day when China, Russia, North Korea put out these lists of these are the criteria you have to meet in order to have free access to our version of the internet. And there will be companies that say, look, we can help you make that list, right? Google will do almost anything so that they can be in China. Amazon will do almost nothing to be in China. They've made two different decisions about where their market is and how much they're willing to change their personal ethics in order to be in that market.
Right. But and I expect this is going to be
going forward, and that's part of the compliance.
Well, and this will probably be pretty straightforward for a lot of companies at a very high level. You know, you may say, I am not willing to do, China or Russia. These are not areas that I'm worried about. That's totally legitimate to say that and go forward with that perspective. But you're going to need to make some of those basic decisions right away. Be very clear about it. But things like Europe, things like Australia, like if you're an American company, that's not as easy to quickly be dismissive of.
Exactly. Well, sadly, we are out of time. But we would like to encourage everybody, if you enjoy this, share it with a friend. Give us a thumbs up on your social media. We know we have a lot of listeners on Apple. Apple's podcasts have got, I think, the lion's share of the market. They're the Google of podcasts. What Google is to search, Apple is to podcast. So share it with your friends. Tell people about it. And you can connect to us individually, all of us. You just search for us. You will find us on Twitter.
And please, we really do appreciate it. Growing the audience is super important. Lots of fun to actually be able to get this out. And if you've got comments and questions, please send them our way.
And as we are moving forward into a new year here, I'm excited about the possibilities to continue to expand this conversation and to make this a very tactical resource for people, right? We are constantly entertained by our own opinions about very complicated things. But what we really want to do is to say, big idea, here's what it means. And by the way, here's what you can do about this locally. So let's get as many people involved in that conversation as possible.
You have your own private three talking heads analysts. Send us a topic and we'll analyze it for you.
Very cool. Well, thank you, gentlemen. That will do it. This has been episode 38 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.